Hi, I'm Beth Massey, and I'm here with Jonathan Aneja, Program Manager on the Visual Basic Compiler team. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Good, how are you?
It's been a while since you've done a video with us.
2 years, probably, or something like that. It has been a while.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, from Canada, originally, the term you like to call it. Been here 3.5 years, maybe, or just under 3.5 or something like that.
Where in Canada?
Just outside Toronto, basically, Toronto. Brisbane Hill.
Cool. Yeah. I have a lot of friends in Toronto.
Cool.
So what brought you to Microsoft?
VB. Love VB, and, well, this is the place that built it, right?
So you were working in Toronto, and then...
Yeah, I was working for a Microsoft contractor for about 9 months, and before that, I was in school.
School. Yeah. All right. So, as you've been on the team ever since, and having a good time?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So what are you going to talk about today?
Today, we'll talk about Link, what it is, and how it works on the inside.
Cool. So no fancy new feature stuff. We're talking about current versions.
Everything you can do in Visual Studio 2008 SP1.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, I mean, I've been using Link for a few years.
Yep.
Beta through, now. And I still am kind of confused at what's going on, really deep dive in behind the scenes in the compiler. So maybe you can help explain some of that.
Yeah, that's the plan today. We'll basically talk about things like anonymous types, expression trees, type inference, lambdas, basically how the compiler takes the query expression and kind of compiles it down into the IL and actually processes it.
All right, so want to get started?
Let's dive in.
All right.
So here we got a straight, vanilla WinForm kind of thing. We have a, kind of a master details view. So we have customers up here. And we have our orders view down here. And so when the customer changes, we want the orders to change, right?
Okay.
Pretty straightforward. And so with Link, we've all seen these kind of query expressions before, from where select. Very easy. 5 lines of code. We can wire up to our data source. We hit F5. And we can now actually page through the customers. So when I change this, the orders change.
Okay. And you're using Link to SQL in this case?
Link to SQL, but you could use Link to entities or XML if you wanted to pull it from XML file, anything like that.
Okay.
Yep. So we're not going to cover really, how to use the query expressions kind of thing. We're going to look at what the compiler does when it sees these query expressions and what it actually compiles it down to and what it actually passes to the Link to SQL runtime.
Okay.
So let's start with type inference. So you notice up here, we didn't actually specify a type for query, right?
Right.
We just said dim query equals. Mm-hmm. So in VB 2005, the compiler would basically insert an as object here, dim query as object equals. But then if you tried to for each over that or pull some of the members out, you're going to be doing either late binding or you're going to get a compile error if option strict is on, right?
Right.
But in VB 2008, you now have something called option infer, and that's on by default. That's at the project level here. We can't even really see it here, but type inference is on. So when I leave off the leave off the type, we're now going to infer the type based on the type of the expression on the right-hand side. So if I hover over query...
And that's for any local variable, though, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Anything inside a method. Yep.
Okay.
And so here you see it's now been inferred as an iQueryable of customer.
Okay.
Because the type of the query expression itself is an iQueryable of customer.
Which is just a collection.
Basically, yeah. iQueryable is just an interface that inherits my enumerable. And we'll talk more later about the difference between iEnumerable and iQueryable.
Okay.
But basically, Link, if your data source implements iEnumerable, you can use Link over it.
Okay.
So now what's going to happen is the compiler is actually going to insert the type for you. So that's what's kind of interesting about type inference is you actually can't tell from the actual IL that gets generated in your assembly whether or not type inference was used. Because if you leave off the type, the compiler just inserts it for you.
Gotcha.
So this is actually the code the compiler generates. Dim query as iQueryable customer just inserts it for you.
So it just tells the compiler how to behave.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we'll knock that off.
You can specify that in the settings somewhere.
Settings. You can say option infer on or off at the top of the file or at the my project level. You can change
it
at the top.
Explicit.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, see, the thing with all these features about Link is it's not just about how the compiler uses them to process. You can also use them in your own code. So here we have a method down here we call type inference. And even if we're doing stuff that has nothing to do with Link, just a regular local variable, I can say dim a equals 4. And I still get the benefits of type inference.
Right.
If I hover over a, it's inferred to be an integer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I do something more complicated, say 4.4 or something like that, well, it's a double. Right?
Right. Okay.
Reference types too. You ever had to type something like
dim ds? Yeah, I tried to trick the compiler. Never worked.
Good. We're doing our job.
I'm not smarter than even the compiler.
If you ever had to do something like this, dim dictionary of, it's taking forever even to type that out. It's annoying to have to tell the compiler what the type is twice.
Yeah, you can put the new over there at least.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in VB,
that's a pet peeve.
in C Sharp, you always had to do it this way,
yeah,
right?
But
VB has had the as new
thing. You can do that, right.
But now it's even a little bit shorter. We save you a character.
So. Okay. It's the same as, so dim d equals new is the same as dim d as new now.
When option infer is on.
Is on.
Yeah. Now, regardless
of
setting option infer.
Still recommend as, though, right? Still recommend
that. With as, you're safe against option infer on off being changed.
Okay, right.
I tend to use as myself, too.
Yeah,
but with equals, you are getting the same benefit.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's how type inference you can be used in your own code. There's also cases where you actually can't specify the name of the type. And we'll get into that later with anonymous type. So it's not just a convenience thing. There's actually cases where you would need type inference or you actually could not process the query.
Okay.
So we'll look at that a bit later. So here we said select row. So we're bringing back the entire customer. I want to focus now on how the compiler processes this part right here, select row.
Okay.
And this is done through something called an object initializer. Object initializers are very helpful when you have APIs that implement something called a create set call pattern. So here we have something that creates a customer, sets a bunch of properties, and then you know calls a method or something like that, right? Current customer dot save or something like that.
Okay.
Create set call, and that's the way we try to design a lot of the framework APIs, just so it's a very easy to understand pattern, right? What happens in this pattern is you end up writing a lot of extra characters that don't really add a lot of value. Current customer dot this, current customer dot this, current customer dot this. Mm-hmm. When VB already has a construct called with,
right.
That makes this simpler, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, link queries are a single expression, and with is a set of statements.
Right.
And anything we can do in link, we need to be able to do at an expression level.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to take with and make it usable inside an object initialization expression. So we can say dim, let me just tab in here, dim customer2 as new customer. Actually, I said expressions, so we should really do equals, but it would work for as well. As new customer. And so you see how this new thing in IntelliSense is called with.
Right.
New customer with, and now I can say, you know, dot customer ID equals and so on. I'll be really glad in VB10 when that underscore character is gone. We're hard at work on that right now. Dot city equals and so on. I won't type out the whole thing, but you get the idea. We've saved you the trouble of having to type the current customer dot, current customer dot, current customer dot. It
right.
You know, basically compacts the code.
Right.
So this
and,
is,
and you don't have to have overloaded constructors.
That's also true.
Yeah,
like,
right.
So when you're designing your own APIs, you can actually come up with a cleaner design now, right?
Okay.
And not, you know, six different overloaded constructors.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gets annoying.
That's cool.
Yep. So let's go back to the select row thing. When we say select row, that's basically equivalent to saying select new customer, right? Because customer is the iteration variable, right?
Okay.
If we do this, though, we're going to have a problem. Do you see what the problem is?
Yeah, we're not initializing
any. Yeah, we're going to have a nice list of empty customers.
Yeah.
And we'll have a very blank form, and that's no good, right?
Right.
So Link needs a way to be able to initialize the customer with the values that came back from the database, right? So we're saying new customer with. And now we say dot, we get all the properties off it, same thing that we got down there.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this is the kind of code that the compiler roughly generates for you, basically, right?
Okay.
So you can say something like dot company name equals. Now here's where it gets interesting. What do you actually assign this to? And you can say you can assign it to, you know, row.company name, but even where did this come from, right? This is the value that's in the link to SQL case, this is actually coming out of a data reader. And then it's being passed into the strongly typed property. But it actually comes out of the data reader non-strongly typed, right? But effectively, so the way I like to think about this is there's kind of like a hidden variable here behind the scenes that represents the value that came out of the database. Because link to SQL is using a data reader, but not everything necessarily using a data reader, right? Link to, you know, some other fancy data store or something like that could use a totally different implementation.
That's the provider's implementation.
Yes, exactly. So, so this represents the value that came out of the provider,
okay.
Right? Company name equals dollar company name. But then you have to do this for like, you know, 20 fields or something like that, right? And you imagine typing that out by hand. Suddenly all the productivity benefits of link, you know, really go away at that point, right? Because,
right.
You know, who wants to type 90 characters here, right?
Yeah.
So instead, if you just type select row, the compiler will do an object initialization on your behalf.
Okay.
But you know, the shorthand query syntax.
Gotcha.
So that's where it's used in link, and that's where you can use it in your own code.
Cool. So when you say select row, you're getting the whole customer. You could still do a partial projection of just those properties.
And that's actually the next thing we'll get into right now. If what if you just wanted to bring back just the company name? Well, you just say select row.company name.
Mm-hmm.
And now type inference kicks in again, and you now have an iQueryable of string because you only brought back one thing, right?
Yeah.
But we're going to have a problem if we do this, row.customer ID.
Mm-hmm.
What does type inference pick now?
Right.
I don't know, right? That's a problem. So the compiler will actually generate a type for you in this case. We call this an anonymous type, or a type without a name. So let's look.
I always think of the U2 song. Streets
of no name. I don't think I know that song.
Type
we're the streets
name.
Of, yeah, okay.
The streets have no name, or the types have no name, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You can start singing for us now.
I'll let
Vaughn know. Sounds good. So here we got select row.company name, row.customer ID, right? So what the compiler is basically going to do is, well, actually, let's do it over here first. So if you have something like, with object initializers, the pattern went new, type name, width, right? For anonymous types, you have the same pattern. Dim my type equals new, type name, width. But there is no type name, so you just skip it. So it's just new width, right? Okay. And you know, we can say something like, what do we select above? We selected
company name
and customer ID. So we'd say dot company name equals Microsoft, I can't spell, and dot customer ID. There we go. And so now the compiler is actually going to generate a type for us that has two properties of type string. And type inference kicks in here too, because company name has been inferred to be a type string. We didn't say dot company name as string. That's just a clumsy, awkward syntax, right? And
right.
You're a pain to have to type that every time. And so now if I come over here to my type, and say dot, well, I've actually got two properties.
Right.
You know, and I can actually even assign to them. Dot customer ID equals, you know, ABC or something like that. And that assignment works.
Cool, they're mutable.
Yeah, so by default, they're mutable.
Okay.
But then we'll talk about the immutable case in a second, right? But first, let's look at how they're actually used in the query.
Okay.
So here we said select row.companyName and row.customerID, right? So when the compiler sees two columns like this, it's going to basically insert the anonymous type syntax for you. It's going to say new width row.companyName, row.customerID.
Okay.
And even that's kind of a shorthand because here we're inferring the name of the columns from the name of the property access.
Right.
So what it really is like this. .companyName equals row.companyName, .customerID equals row.customerID.
So if you wanted an anonymous type with different property names, then what you're projecting from, you could actually have like something.
Oh, absolutely.
You,
you could say document name 222.
That. That's kind of cool.
Yep.
Okay.
And
yeah,
also,
that makes sense.
Even that, if I backtrack a bit, I think functions are the control, that's why. If we go back to this part here, you don't even have to drop the anonymous type syntax to rename a column. You could just say dot column name.
Yeah, I've used that before.
Equals row dot company name. That's a handy little syntactic convenience kind of thing, right?
Or you can use let too, right?
Let has a slightly different purpose.
Okay.
It's to introduce an iteration, a range variable into scope.
Right. Okay.
But if it comes out of your projection, then you get the same net result.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right, so let's see if I can undo all the way back to what we had before. So when we did the new width thing here, this still is not exactly equivalent to what the compiler actually generates. There's one more thing it has to do, and that's the whole mutable versus immutable thing you were talking about before, right?
Right.
So here we say row.customerID. But if we look at what actually comes out of the query, if we actually tried to assign to one of these variables that came out of the query in the earlier case, the compiler would actually say the property is read-only.
Mm.
And that's because over here, when it comes out of a query, we actually insert key on the anonymous type.
Okay.
And key is a modifier that basically means make this column read-only. And so if you put this on every column, you get an immutable anonymous type.
Which now you can use it for comparisons now.
Yep. Okay. And so we override equals and get hash code and all that stuff,
okay,
right?
Gotcha.
But see, now when you try to assign to it, property customer ID is read-only. And
right.
So if you're just pulling something out of the database and you're not going to want to modify it just for a lookup table or something like that,
right.
This is a safer thing to do. You don't accidentally modify something, right?
Right.
So what happens over here is when you don't actually say the new width syntax, like if you say new width, you're in control now. Because you drop down to the lower level.
Uh-huh.
But if you just said select row.companyName, row.customerID, the compiler is going to insert key for you on your behalf. Key.
Gotcha.
And this means that in VB and C Sharp, the anonymous types that come out of a query are both immutable. But VB also gives you the added flexibility of making them mutable if you want them to be.
Oh,
and that can be handy as like a little structure for passing some data around and using late binding or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can just cast it to object and then and use late binding on it or something like that.
Okay.
So that's the mutable versus immutable thing. Now, the mutable versus immutable thing can seem sort of academic and kind of who cares, but there's actually scenarios where this actually matters.
Right.
So let's look at a scenario like that. I got a combo box here, and I want to fill this with a bunch of customer names, and then when I select the value, I want the selected value for the combo box to be the customer ID.
Okay.
And we're going to have to deal with anonymous types here, and this is where understanding mutability and immutability gets important.
Okay.
So let's do this. Let's say... I want to say combo box, well actually let's make a query first. Dim query equals, we'll say from row in db.customers. And we'll say select row.companyName, row.customerID. And so here type inference is kicked in. We have an iQueryable of anonymous type.
Mm-hmm.
and now we want to actually wire this up to the combo box, right? We're going to say combo box 1 dot data source equals query, and we're going to say combo box 1 dot, display member equals, and we want to display the company name, and we want the value member to be customer ID.
Okay.
So far, straightforward, nothing really,
right.
No rocket science there or anything like that. Let's make sure this thing actually runs. Okay. Yep, I think that's right. Let's go ahead and run that. This is where we wait for the exception. Parameter name, data member. What did I do wrong here?
To list?
Yes, good call. Thank you. I always make that mistake. Query.toList. Now we've got a second exception.
Yeah, but so I'm doing it on a different one right there. The first one.
Oh, yeah, I need to change this one back. Select row. It was always worked by the fifth time.
There you go. It's going to create a binding list anyways, right?
ToList is actually a straight list of T, I think. Is there? I think in the earlier CDPs there might have been a two binding
list.
Yeah,
but if you don't specify it and you set it to the data source, what is it? Yeah, in your first one you're just setting the query.
Oh, I'm not actually sure what happens in that case.
Yeah,
it's going to depend on the implementation.
It depends on the provider, I have a feeling. Because in linked entities, it actually may execute it a couple times.
Be careful.
So it's better to come up with your in-memory list first. So calling ToList is safer.
Well, yeah, ToList protects you against like deferred execution mistakes and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Right, so, yeah, in general,
I think it's
that's
a best practice to do that, yeah.
Yeah. So here we got the name of all the customers, and you know, if we pick something, the value has been selected.
Okay.
Now the problem is, how do we insert an all customers element in here with a value of -1?
Okay.
So we're going to have to find a way to merge something into our list.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets a little bit tricky because we're merging an anonymous type in with other anonymous types. So this is where the mutability, immutability thing becomes important. So let's try and write the code for that. So I'm going to write an all option. I want to say dim all option equals. Now if I make an anonymous type that is compatible with the anonymous type previously generated, then the compiler will do what we call unification. It'll unify the anonymous types to use the same anonymous type definition or kind of structure, I guess.
Okay.
So we need to match this exactly. And so the criteria for unification is it has to have the same columns with the same name in the same order with the same data type with the same mutability.
Okay.
Sounds complicated, but basically it just means match the structure exactly, right?
So we're going to say a union would have to be in SQL, right?
I guess so. I don't know SQL that well. You're the SQL expert in the room. So we're going to say new with dot company name equals, and we're going to say all customers. So far it looks like we're fine, right? Because they're both strings. And the name is the same and the order is the same so mm-hmm. far, right? And we're going to say dot customer ID equals, and we'll say -1. And it's actually a string in Northwind. I don't quite know why. But okay, so that's our all option. Now we need a way to actually merge this in, right? So union is going to be part of the solution,
okay.
Right? So we want to have a helper method that does this, though. And the problem is, how do you pass an anonymous type across methods?
Right.
Well, one way is passing it to object, but then we have to use late binding, and that's okay, but it's not ideal.
Right.
But there's actually a strongly typed way to pass an anonymous type across methods using generics.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's what we're going to try now. So what I'm going to do is say, let's look at my helper code here. I always forget this part. Yeah, there we go. So we're going to want to make a helper function called addOptionForAll. And we're going to make this generic.
Okay.
And we're going to have a source as, what's this coming in as? It's going to be coming in as an IEnumerable of T. And we want an element to add as T. And we're going to send out an IEnumerable of T.
So you could do this with any defining this for anything. Any query?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is like a general purpose helper method you can mm-hmm. use. And that's the advantage of making this generic, right? Mm-hmm. If you have an anonymous type, like if this customer ID is an integer somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
the same helper method will work.
Cool.
That's the advantage. So now what we need to do is we want to call this thing. Well, actually, let's write the implementation first. So there's this union helper method that you mentioned. The tricky thing with union is it takes two sequences. And we only have one sequence here, right? We have an IEnumerable.
Yeah, right.
But element to add is not
right.
a sequence.
Right.
So what we want to do is wrap element to add in a sequence,
okay.
right? So we're going to say return, and we'll say new Oh, I think I just hit F1. Oh, there goes help. Never miss the escape key or you'll regret it in Visual Studio. we don't have to go in the background. Yeah, clearly we can't. Oh, there it goes. All right.
It's not as bad as it used to be.
Yeah, exactly. they have fixed the perf there. So we're going to make a new T array of element to add. Now we're going to say dot union. And we're going to say source.
Okay.
And the order actually matters here, right? Because we want all customers to come at the top. And so we have to put this first. If you swap the order, it would come the other way around.
Okay.
Right? So we have our helper method here. Now we've made a very subtle bug so far. And so tell me if you spot the bug. Dim merged equals add option for all. And what do we want to say here? We want to say query.toList and the all option. And then we're actually here going to say merge.toList. Now, why did we get that compiler error? It's because of a subtle bug we introduced somewhere else. You see, it's a tricky one to get.
I don't know.
Well, let's look at the error message. And the error message is kind of scary here. But there's actually some useful information in here, believe it or not.
Arguments not convert to the same type.
Yeah. Well, even before that, the cannot be data type of type parameters in method blah, 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 cannot be inferred from these arguments because they do not convert to the same type. Specifying the data type explicitly might correct this error. What this is talking about is something called generic parameter type inference. Because when we called this method, we didn't pass any generic parameters.
Oh.
But this is a generic method. So the compiler needs to be able to infer what T is. And if we gave it the same T here that we did here, everything would work fine.
I see.
But we actually didn't. We messed up here, right?
Right.
Because this is going to come out as an immutable anonymous type. And here we made a mutable anonymous type.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they look the same, they're not exactly the same, right?
Okay.
If we put key in and make them both read-only, then we're matching what's coming out of the query.
Yeah.
And when we do that, the compiler can now unify the types.
That's really
they're now the same type.
Yeah.
It's very subtle.
Yeah.
That's why you got to be aware of this type of
thing.
See, the under the covers it's subtle, but the scenario is actually very common, right? Inserting all customers in or something like that is something that you totally might have to do,
right?
So now if we go ahead and run this, let's see if this runs without exception. We now have our all customers thing at the top.
Okay.
So it's a nice way to kind of mix anonymous types in with data binding with the combo box kind of thing.
Cool.
But this is where understanding key and the mutability, immutability stuff under the covers is important.
Right.
All right, so that's anonymous types. And an actual real-world example of how you really would use it in your own code, right? It's not just a link thing. Let's talk about nullable. So VB's actually had some basic level of nullable support since 2005.
Okay.
We haven't supported the question mark syntax, but you could actually in VB 2005 or something like that say, you know, dim b as nullable of integer. And that would actually work, right? You actually could represent these things because it's just a straight generic structure, right? But we didn't support the shorter question mark syntax and, you know, coalesce ternary and some of these other operations you might want to do on nullable,
right?
So let's look at kind of a subtle thing to understand when you're working with nullable here. Dim a as integer equals nothing. So the question here is a null? And this is subtle. This is where you got to know your VB.
Yes.
What do you think? Well, it's nothing.
It's nothing.
It's nothing
not
null.
It's necessarily null. Integer.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
It's the default value. It's zero, actually.
Yeah.
C# actually splits this into two concepts. C# has default of T and null. So the equivalent line here in C# would actually be something like this. Int A equals default of int. I even remember the semicolon.
Gotcha.
And so default of int is zero. And so nothing in this case, when assigned to a value type in VB, means default of the value
type.
That
always confused me.
So all the bits set to zero.
Strings are reference types.
Yeah, strings are reference
types.
And
they're different. And
yes.
You would think that they're like value types, and they're not.
Yep.
So that's what always kills you.
Yeah, strings are complicated.
And if you compare what a null string to empty, it actually evaluates to true, right?
I believe so. I always get mixed up on that one.
That's a very odd thing in VB.
Yep. But now, what if you actually wanted to store a real null value? Like, let's say you have a column in a database that's, you know, an integer or a long or something like that, but it's actually null in the database. It's not zero.
Right.
Well, then representing that in the .NET type system becomes harder, and that's why we have nullable types.
Right.
And so if we do something like this, dim a as nullable of integer equals nothing. Can't have two variables the same name. This actually means something different, because now A2 is a structure that has this has value thing.
Right, okay.
And if has value is false, then we're storing a real null here and not the value. So now zero and null are not the same thing, which is good. It gives you more control, more power over this, right?
Yeah.
What VB2008 adds is the ability to do a shorter syntax here.
Question mark.
You can say a as integer question mark, and the question mark just means nullable of, right?
Yep.
So this brings up things like null propagation. So what if you did something like this, dim b equals 4, and you do something like dim c equals a2 plus b. Well, here we're going to do something called nullable operator lifting. Fancy term, but it just means do the right thing and do null propagation. You have a2 is the actual value null, and b is an integer.
Mm-hmm.
So when you add null and an integer, when you add null and anything, you want to get null. And the way the operator lifting term here, all that means is when you're adding the this integer b and a nullable integer, so you have a nullable integer and an integer, and you actually can't add two things that are not the same type.
Right.
So we lift the integer to be a nullable integer, because that's a safe widening conversion. Right?
Okay.
There's no potential for data loss.
Okay.
And now you're adding two of the same type.
I gotcha.
That's all it is. Okay, so let's talk about things like ternary.
So C would be a nullable of integer.
Yes, and type inference actually kicks in here too.
Right.
Dim C as
integer
question mark. Yep,
okay.
That's a good point. All right, so let's talk about ternary and coalesce. So we got an example here. Oh, actually, one other thing you can do here is you can say dim D question mark equals 4. So you can combine type inference with nullable.
Cool.
And you'll get an integer question mark inferred.
Okay.
All right, so often you want to be able to check inline in an expression if something actually contains the value null, right? So we can do something like dim e equals if, you know, say b greater than 0, then we want to return b converted to a string. Otherwise, we want to return maybe the value empty or something like that. And then you can imagine this might be inline in an expression or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens here is this is actually inferred to be a string. Is this actually the right example I want to use? Yeah, we can work with this. If b greater than 0. And so it's a way, think of this as like the IIF operator that we had before.
Yeah.
Except now it's really a true operator. It's not just
it's
a runtime.
Circuits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because if these were both function calls, they would both get called with IIF. And
right.
That's inefficient. Yeah. So.
Well, it's usually not what you want either.
Yeah, exactly.
So
now it'll make an intelligent decision based on this and only call one of these two,
cool.
Which is good. More efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So that's ternary. We also have a shorter version called coalesce. So for coalesce, we can do something like this. We can say dim f equals if, and it'll say a, it'd be a2, otherwise the value negative 1. And so here we're actually checking if it's null or not,
mm-hmm.
right? In this scenario, we're not really working with anything to do with null, right? Here we're using the short form. We're saying coalesce. And this basically translates to the ternary form would be if a2 is not nothing, then a2, otherwise negative 1. I guess really I probably should have done this one before the other one. So let's move this up. So here we're saying if a2 is not null, then return a2, otherwise return the value negative 1,
mm-hmm.
right? This can be useful if you wanted to like do a member access off it or something like that. It's a good way to avoid null reference exceptions,
right?
Check if it's not null in line. But if you're just doing a simple comparison like this, you can actually use the short form. If you just want to return itself, then don't pass the second parameter, and basically the last one just comes there.
Cool.
So ternary and coalesce. VB now has first-class nullable support. Everything you can do in C# with null, you can do in VB with null.
Cool.
So. Helpful in linked database scenarios when pulling null out of a database,
right.
Things like that, right? All right, let's talk about lambdas. Lambdas tends to be this feature that people think of as, you know, big and scary when it's really not. It's just functions inside a function, right?
Right.
All right, so we've got an array of integers here, and let's say we want to pull out only the even integers, right?
Okay.
So we can do something like this. We can say dim filter equals enumerable. So this is a new type in .NET 3.5 that comes with link. Defines a lot of the standard query operators like, you know, aggregate, group by, join, all this
mm-hmm.
stuff. We're going to say .where. And we're going to say nums is our source array. And then we want to make a function that's actually going to process these.
Okay.
So we'll do this the long way, the way you could do it in VB 2005. And then we'll look at the shorter form way of doing it in VB 2008. Right? So we want to make a function called isEven. We want to make that shared, actually. Shared function is even. And what do we want to take here? Help me write the is even function. We want to take an integer, and we want to return a boolean. And we want to say return n mod 2 equals 0. I'm worried for a second I couldn't write that function. It's kind of scary. all right. And so now we want to say address of is even. So you use the address of operator in VB to point to another method, right? And basically, where is taking a delegate of type func of integer comma boolean? This delegate, and a delegate is just a compiler checked, or a strongly typed function pointer, basically, right?
Okay.
And so here we have delegate function of t comma r, and the first parameters of type t, and the return values of type r. And these are actually defined for you in the framework. We've typed out the definition here, but these types are already predefined, right? So we say address of is even, and because this is even function takes a parameter that's integer, so t gets inferred as integer, and r gets inferred as boolean.
Mm-hmm.
So this function is compatible with this delegate, so we can point to it.
Okay.
And so if we were to go ahead and run this, actually, let's do that. For each n in filtered, message box n. And we're just going to come over here and run lambdas. I can't find your leaky key. There we go. Okay, let's go ahead and run that. And so we should get the values 2 and 4. 2, 4. Excellent. We can do basic math. That's exciting.
It's always good.
All right. So we got our is even function here.
Okay.
What's kind of annoying about this is the important thing. N mod 2 equals 0. And look at all the stuff we had to type around this to express a very simple concept.
Yeah.
What's even worse is, you know, later on I come and modify my code and insert more helper methods here, and suddenly this might not even be on the same screen anymore.
Right.
And I'm looking at this thing, address of is even, and I can't look at this method and understand what it does by itself.
Right.
I have to jump to another spot in the code.
Mm-hmm.
So from a maintenance point of view, that kind of sucks too, right? So let's bring our code back. Hopefully I didn't throw it too far. Almost there. So what lambda expressions allow you to do is define this function right here in line. So we can now say function n mod 2 equals 0. And this is the same code that we had before, except we're now defining it in line. So we only have the expression after the function. There's like an implicit return statement here. We actually don't let you put the return statement there, because we want this to be a short, compact syntax, right? And for n, we actually infer this to be of type integer. And the way the compiler
is working with nums?
Exactly.
Right.
Because where is actually defined as a generic method. So you can see on the tooltip, it says where of integer.
Mm-hmm.
But the definition is actually generic,
mm-hmm.
where of t. But then it takes in an ienumerable of t and a func of t comma boolean.
Right.
And so for the first parameter, we passed in something that implements ienumerable of integer.
An array and implements t is our integer.
Yeah, exactly. So from the first parameter, the compiler already knows that t has to be integer.
Right.
So when we get to the second parameter, we say, okay, well, you have a func of t comma boolean. We already know that t is integer, therefore n is an integer. And as a result, you actually don't have to type this. This is actually also another form of type inference.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Now, you can put it in the long way if you want to, but the point is, you don't need to.
Okay.
Right? Oh, I'm missing the control there. There we go. So this is an example of lambda expressions, how you can use this in your own code.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get towards the end, we'll actually see how Link uses lambda expressions internally for processing your query.
Now, couldn't you have just written a Link statement without just...
That would do that? Absolutely. But, again, but that defeats the point of the talk, because we're going under the covers, right?
Yeah, okay.
And this is the fun stuff, for me anyways.
Yeah. So but what's really happening when you're writing Link statements is lambda expressions are being used, you just may not be explicitly writing them out.
Exactly. Like
this.
If you look at something above, where you have this where row.country equals Canada,
right.
We'll get to what it exactly is at the end, but it's something like this. You know, dim query equals queryable dot where, and was it, we'll just say cust or something like that.
Right.
Our input's ienumerable.
Okay.
And then you could do something like function c.country equals Canada. So you can use this in your own type of situations where like for things like array.sort or enumerable.where.
Okay.
But Link actually uses this internally as well.
Right, okay.
So this brings us to expression let's do extension methods before we go to expression trees. So extension methods. What if you wanted to do two dot where calls on this, right?
Right.
What if you also wanted to then say, you know, let's come over here and say dot where. I'm cheating here. I should do this the long way first. What if you also wanted to say, after you got the even numbers, I only want the numbers bigger than 3?
Okay.
Well, to do this, we can add a second call to enumerable dot where, right? We can say enumerable dot where. And then we'll pass a lambda around the second thing, right? So we're going to evaluate the inner one, then the outer one.
Okay.
And then we can do something like this. Function. I forgot my underscore, yes. BB10 will say this. Function, and we'll say n, and we'll say n greater than 3. And this will work, and let's go ahead and run that. And now we'll only get 4, because we've done 2 operations on it.
Mm-hmm.
But now we kind of see the need for extension methods here, because now I have to read this from the inside out, and it's ugly, right?
Right.
So what would be nice is if I could do this a different way. So I'm going to... keep missing the control key. There we go. Whoops. I'm going to master copy and paste by the end of this. So let's comment this out. So we'll see our old way side by side with our new way.
Okay.
And we'll call this, yeah, that's fine. So now, instead of saying enumerable.where, you know, let's just retype it from scratch. We're just going to say nums.where.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of inside out, I want to be able to read this from left to right.
Right.
Nums.where, and I need to take in a function, so we'll say function n, and you get a great IntelliSense experience all the way through as well. And now I can chain it again. I can say dot where again, function n, n greater than 3.
So now you're reading how you normally
read. Left to right. I mean, I'd much rather read this line of code than those three.
It's easier.
You know, much easier to understand.
There.
Yep. Well, what did the compiler actually do here with this where extension method trick?
Right.
Well, basically, all we're doing is we're moving the inner the first parameter to the left, and the compiler is actually just going to translate it into this code.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care what the compiler translates it into. We don't see that code, right? If that's ugly, that's not a big deal, as long as it's performant and efficient, right? But for the code we're actually looking at in our editor, this is much easier to read, left to right.
Okay.
There's other reasons you need extension methods, too.
So where is the extension of this type?
Yes, so there's a where method, extension method defined on IEnumerable of T.
Of T, right.
And then, you know, just T just gets inferred based on the type of the array,
mm-hmm, okay.
Right? Okay, so we've got this where extension method. The other reason you need extension methods is they allow you to extend a type from outside the type. So if we want link to operate over anything that implements IEnumerable, and you want to be able to do where or group by or joining operations on an IEnumerable, we can't just add a where method to IEnumerable, because then anyone who implements IEnumerable, this is by definition of what an interface is,
right,
would have to supply a where method.
Right.
But, you know, what if your thing only supports, if your data source only supports where, but maybe doesn't support advanced things like grouping, we still want you to be able to use link. We want it to be kind of like an opt-in thing.
Okay.
So we don't want to put those methods on the interface itself, because we also just break code. Your code,
right,
you'd upgrade to Visual Studio 2008, nothing would compile anymore,
right,
until you go implement query providers. And that would be kind of sucky, right?
Right.
So instead what we do is have these extension methods that basically appear as if they're on IEnumerable, even though they're not really on IEnumerable. They're actually just shared methods.
Okay.
That pass in an IEnumerable, and the compiler does a syntax transformation.
I see.
So that's basically what's going on here. Okay, so we talked about extension methods and lambdas. Let's talk about expression trees. This is one of my favorite features.
So you can write your own extension methods in any type you want.
Oh, absolutely, right? You just
cool
make a module,
method, right? Yeah.
Make a function, put the extension attribute on it, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
That's really all
it is. It's a more discoverable way of getting methods on.
Yeah. The main scenario, though, is going to be more using the extension methods that the framework provides.
Right.
But if you want to and you have a good reason to, you can make your own extension methods.
Cool.
It's an easy feature to abuse, though, too.
Yeah.
You know, so you gotta be careful. All right, so here we have expression trees.
All right, this is what I always get confused about. What the heck?
Expression trees is definitely more of an advanced feature than some of the stuff we talked about before. It's really the way the compiler it's the way Link works without the compiler having to learn SQL.
Okay.
SQL's hard, I don't understand it, and teaching the compiler SQL would just be a pain. We don't want the compiler to know SQL. SQL changes, it's just architecturally is not a good fit for the compiler to be tightly tied to SQL, right? So instead, and also, there's different data sources in Link, right? Not everything is SQL.
Your compiler extensible,
well, and you're working
right?
with Oracle, and you have PL SQL versus SQL Server and TL SQL, or T SQL. You don't want to have to teach the compiler every variant of SQL that exists in the known universe, right? Just not a good architecture. So instead what we do is we have the compiler generate expression trees. The compiler is very good at generating trees. That's what it does for a living. Parse trees, bound trees, all this sort of stuff.
Okay.
So if we generate a tree that represents the expression, we can then pass this off to a provider, and you know, the link to SQL runtime can generate T-SQL.
Okay.
Some other provider can generate some other type of SQL. Some other provider can do something totally different, could search the file system or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's provider specific. This way the compiler stays, you know, kind of agnostic about the specific architecture that it's dealing with, right?
And it's up to the providers to take the trees, do what they need to
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Okay. So the compiler only spits out expression trees from link queries. It's either delegates or expression trees, but it's not going to spit out SQL or anything else like that.
Right.
So here I said we're talking about expression trees, but what I've actually shown is a lambda, right? Dim func as func of integer comma boolean equals function n, n greater than 3. If we want to generate an expression tree for this, we're going to type almost the same line of code with a slight difference. Dim expr as expression of func of integer comma boolean. Get Mr. Paren there. Equals function n, n greater than 3. The only difference between these two lines of code is we've wrapped this in this thing called expression of. So there's an expression of t type, right? Expression of the delegate type.
Okay.
Now, on this assignment, you're making a lambda and assigning it to a delegate. So you can actually invoke it. You can say func bracket. And I think we must have an IntelliSense bug or something there. That's not right. Okay, we can do it through invoke. It should work through the paren syntax as well. I'm actually curious why that didn't work. Let's try this. Oh, it does. Okay, just install. IntelliSense bug, install. Func.invoke, you know, 4 or something like that, and okay. this would return true, right?
Okay.
You can't do that on the expr, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not a delegate anymore. Mm-hmm. This is a tree that represents a delegate.
Okay.
This gets into that, you know, binary tree stuff and all that we did, you know, back in college, right? If you do n and then greater than, oh, no, I got this backwards. Let's do greater than n 3. So it's a tree that's a greater than node, and the left leaf is an expression.parameter. It's a parameter expression,
mm-hmm.
and then this is a constant expression. And so now the compiler, even though it's a lambda on the right-hand side, it's not actually generating a function. It's going to generate a tree that represents that function.
Okay.
Basically, the VBA C# compiler special case this type. It's a type that we know about. And when a lambda, when a lambda's target type is expression of delegate type, then we don't generate the delegate, we generate the expression tree. And right now it looks like we're kind of far away from, you know, from where select.
Uh-huh.
But this all happens under the covers in a from where select. And we'll put the whole thing back together in a second.
Okay.
Yep. Looks like I'm freaking out here.
That's all right.
So dim expert as expression of func of integer comma boolean.
Mm-hmm.
Before we put it all back together, though, I want to go even a little bit deeper. Because even here, this is actually a bit of a shortcut. So let's write out the long way, the full code that the compiler would generate here.
Okay.
Let's write the tree manually. So we're saying dim param equals expression dot parameter. And so this is going to take in a type, and so we're going to say get type integer, because that's the type coming in. And then this name is actually kind of meaningless, but we can call it m. And then, so we've generated a parameter expression. So
okay.
So basically, thus far, we've generated this much of the tree,
okay.
Right? Or really this part, right?
Okay.
Now we want to represent this part, the greater than, and mm-hmm. the 3.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to say dim greater than equals expression dot greater than. The left node is going to be a param. So we see we have a left expression and a right expression.
I see, cool. Right.
And we're just going to stitch the tree together, basically, right? So greater than param. And then the right node is 3. And 3 is just a constant, right?
Uh-huh.
So we can just encode that as an expression dot constant with a value 3. So now in these two lines, we've generated this much of the expression. But this is a lambda expression.
Mm-hmm.
So now we need to generate this part, the function n. So here I'm going to say dim lambda expr equals expression dot lambda of func of integer comma boolean. And we want to pass in, just a parameter, there we go. And we're going to pass in greater than, and then we're going to pass in the actual parameter. And this is why having the compiler generate expression trees automatically is nice, because this line is understandable. This line just gets,
right.
this just gets messy. You have expression trees and generics and delegates flying all over the place, and it's a pain to have to type that out for n greater than 3.
Right.
You know, 3 really complicated lines, right? But at the same time, when you have built these trees up, you can start doing some pretty cool stuff with that. You can actually turn an expression tree into executable code. So you can take the tree and compile it at runtime.
Oh.
You know, normally we're compiling at design time, but you can actually invoke a compiler at runtime. It's called the expression compiler. So I can say something like dim compile tree equals lambda expr dot compile.
Oh, cool.
And this returns a func of integer comma boolean. So we started with a lambda, we went to an expression tree of an expression tree representing a lambda, but we can now get the lambda out of that expression tree, and this actually compiles and literally generates IL at runtime.
Huh.
And now compile tree is an actual delegate. So I can say message box, you know, is 4 greater than 3. And compile tree, and we'll pass the value 4. And let's go ahead and run expression trees. Get a 5. And we actually got the value true. So it actually executed that as a delegate at runtime.
Interesting. So what kind of like real world examples what are people building?
Well, so you can build your own actual providers.
Okay, that's how you would have to.
Yeah, so link to entities and link to SQL.
Makes sense, yeah.
They work against the actual expression trees.
Right.
So you wanted to build your own custom provider, you could work with expression trees, or even just scenarios like this where you just want to dynamically generate code. If you want to have code generation scenarios or stuff like that,
right?
And it's expression based, you can actually use this.
Cool.
It's a full blown feature.
Interesting.
Okay, so we talked about a lot of different features.
Mm-hmm.
I want to actually put the whole thing, the big picture, back together now, right? Query translation. From cust in db.customers. I don't know why I did two list on that. In db.customers, where country, select cust. So let's go step by step and turn this into the long form code that the compiler actually generates, right? So we'll say dim q2. And so we're going to actually insert the type. So the type here is an iQueryable of customer.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about iQueryable and iEnumerable before. Basically, iQueryable is expression tree based, iEnumerable is delegate based.
Okay.
iQueryable means execute the query remotely, iEnumerable means execute in memory.
Okay.
So you're working with a database, you want to execute remotely, so you get the benefit of indexes and things like that, right?
Gotcha.
So we're going to say dim q2 as iQueryable of customer. So we're taking care of the type inference step. And now we want to not use from, where, and select. We're only going to use the other features to get the same effect as the link query, right?
Okay.
So now we're going to say db.customers. And now there's extension methods defined on customers, because customers is of type table of t, which implements iQueryable of t, right?
Okay.
So we're now going to say .where. This is where all the lambda and expression tree stuff comes.
Mm-hmm.
Where takes 4 overloads. We're going to look at two of them in particular. This one takes a predicate, which is of type func of customer, comma, boolean. So this is the one that takes a delegate, right? This one takes an expression of func of customer, comma, boolean, and returns an iQueryable. The other one, I lost it. The other one returns an iEnumerable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in memory versus remote.
I see.
Now, in general, remote is better than in memory, right? Because, you know, there can be optimizations happening server side and, you know, indexes and, you know, just load on the server kind of thing, right?
Especially if you're running databases.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to prefer remote over local.
Okay.
So if we just pass function, we'll say c.country equals Canada. And one thing I'm going to do actually is let's just move this down to the next line so that whole thing fits. So we passed in a lambda here, but how did the compiler actually pick which, because there's two where overloads that are compatible, right? One takes a delegate, and one takes expression of delegate. And we saw above in expression trees that both assignments are valid, right? I can assign a lambda to a delegate, or I can assign a lambda to an expression of delegate. So the compiler actually has a rule when it does its overload resolution to prefer the expression tree-based one, or to prefer iQueryable over iEnumerable, or more specifically, to prefer expression tree over delegate.
Okay.
And so this way, the compiler is just going to intelligently do the right thing, which is prefer remote.
Okay.
And what's nice is this all happened under the covers. Like, as I write this query, I'm not even really thinking about the fact that this is local or remote, right? It's just going to do the right thing.
Okay.
So we've now said db.customers.where, and now we have to do the select part.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to come over here and we're going to say dot select, and this also takes a lambda. So we're going to say function c. Now here's the interesting thing. We actually didn't do anything in our select,
right.
So we're just going to say c.
C.
Simple. But what if we'd actually done, you know, cust.company name?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then here, this is where that transformation would actually happen.
Okay.
A function that takes in C and only returns the company name.
Gotcha.
Right? If we did an XML literal, you know, something like this.
Oh, yeah.
Press enter. Beyond the scope of this talk kind of thing. But I know, one of your favorite features.
Totally.
And it's something like this, you know, cust.company name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then over here, you can actually do this inside the lambda and even generate an expression
right
tree
inside.
For it.
Okay, cool.
Because this isn't really lambdas here. This is really expression trees, right? Oh, what? What? Got the whole thing.
Yeah.
Cool. So control C.
There you go.
And
C.
Over here, yep. And remember, this isn't generating a delegate. This is going to generate an expression tree that represents the XML literal.
Yeah.
But this is how this actually happens, you know, under the covers.
Cool.
So I'm going to jump back to what we had before. Just keep it simple because we still got a little bit ways to go. Okay, so we're just going to say just select cust. And so remember, when this actually got assigned to the expression tree, the compiler is then generating all this code for you to actually represent these trees, right? So this would be an expression.equals with a member access on this side and a constant on that side. But the nice thing is we don't need to think about all this. The compiler will just spit out these trees for us, pass them off to link to SQL runtime. It walks the tree, translates it to SQL, basically.
Cool.
Okay, so we've done our dot select here. The last concept I want to cover here, and also if you've done an anonymous type, the new with would happen here as well, right?
Right.
Last concept I want to talk about, a little bit advanced, is called closures. So I have a string here, and it would be better if I actually made this a local, right? Dim country equals Canada. All right, so here we've used type inference, we've created a string. But now what if I store my query outside the method, right? Let's just comment this for a second. What if I do something like this? What if I say query to execute equals query, and then I let the method exit? We have a problem now in that the query is pointing to something that's only defined locally in the method,
right?
And so, you know, the whole thing with the stack and the heap, right? On the stack, you're going to have a local, which is pointing at an object allocated on the heap, which is a type string, right? But when the method exits, the CLR garbage collector, basically, the pointer on the stack moves, and so everything above that's now available for garbage collection. So if later on, outside this method, we try to execute this query that we stored, we could be executing a query that points to something that was already garbage collected, and that just sounds like a recipe for disaster,
right?
So the compiler has to do something on your behalf here. It has to rewrite your query, actually. So where you have this where cust.country equals country, we need to lift this local into a closure. And so what happens is the compiler literally lifts it out and creates like a compiler-generated class called closure.
Okay.
Now, this is an approximation of what happens. It's a little more complicated than this, but this is the basic idea.
Okay.
And then it rewrites every access to country to be something like, you know, new closure dot country or something like that.
Okay.
And I made it private. Let's make that public. Conceptually, this is roughly what happens.
Okay.
Now, all the other features I showed before, you can use in your own code. Closures is kind of something that just happens for you, kind of thing.
Okay.
But it's useful to know about the behavior.
And if you were, say, getting the value of country by calling a method, then the method call would end up in this magic closure?
On this part, yes.
Yeah.
Because the key thing is extending the lifetime of the variable itself.
Right.
Not so much the what's on the right-hand side.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay.
So anyways, this is kind of an approximation of, and also we didn't actually rewrite the extension method part. We'll just do that as like a last step here. db.customers.where. Oh, what did
you
do
don't
wrong?
Have country anymore.
Oh, right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's new closure.
So let's put this back to Canada. So here we can still read this from left to right.
Mm-hmm.
But extension methods are not a CLR concept. They're a language concept, right? So what actually happens is something more like this. Queryable dot where bracket db dot customers, comma, underscore. And then I think we go back to it there. C.country, and then we've done dot select, and then we want to do the dot select, right? So then we have to say queryable dot select. So we're going to move this one over here. And you can see how much work the compiler is doing for you on your behalf just by how much work we have to do to simulate it, right?
Right.
Dot select, and let's kill this part. And what did I do wrong now?
Comma.
Oh, yeah. And so now the extension method part has been undone. We still haven't generated the actual expression tree code, and we haven't done the closure stuff.
Right.
But we filled in this thing. If there was an anonymous type, we were taking care of that. Conceptually, this is roughly what's happening under the covers.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of powerful features here used to make Link work, but you can also use them in your own code,
mm-hmm.
in the examples we saw above.
Very cool.
So that's kind of a sneak peek about how the queries get processed under the covers.
So have you ever written your own provider or some sort of prototype?
I've written something similar. Do we have internet access on this machine?
Probably.
Well, let's try it. What could possibly go wrong? I think the closest thing I've written to a provider would be up on the VB team blog. I guess this is our obligatory plug for your blog, and we didn't even plan this.
BB Dev Center.
BB Dev Center. It's amazing how that all worked out. If you come over here and click on my name on the side here, if you go down to implementing dynamic searching using Link from August 07.
I've read that one before. That's cool.
This one shows how you can use expression trees dynamically at runtime to build up your query.
Cool.
So for just this part of the query, that's the expression tree code you have to write with generic parameters flying all over the place. And imagine running 12 lines of complex expression tree code, right? It's just it's a pain, right?
Yeah.
So what this API does is it gives you a helper method called createCondition.
Okay.
You pass in a string, you pass in an operator, and you pass in a string.
Okay.
And then it generates the expression tree for you. It's an abstraction over expression trees.
Okay.
Makes them simpler to use. And then there's a control that comes with it that generates these conditions and that type of thing. If you want to poke more into expression trees, I'd say just dive into the code here. There's a lot of comments in here, and it's basically if you want to dive deep and understand how expression trees work.
Cool.
This would be a good sample.
That's good. That's a good real world implementation on dynamic.
Yeah, and I wouldn't really call this a query provider. It's more of a query helper kind of thing.
Okay.
But it still goes deep into expression trees.
Cool. Very cool. Wow.
Let's come back to VS here.
This is helpful for me to kind of understand how Link works better.
It's nice to kind of get back and look at the product we actually shipped, rather than it's all been VB10 lately, kind of thing.
So what in VB10, I know we've got multi-line statements and multi-line lambdas now.
Yep.
So they're not just expressions. So you can even get a little bit more complicated.
Oh, absolutely. Like on your .where. Right now we're restricted to a single expression here, right? But imagine being able to press enter and get an end function and get a full method inside a method there.
Right.
And there's a lot of powerful stuff you can do with that.
That's pretty cool.
And of course, the actual, right here you see __ in the queries. Implicit line continuation in VB10. You don't need to do that anymore.
Right.
Auto properties, making things simpler there. Collection initializers.
Cleaner.
Yeah. So we're not really extending Link directly in VB10, but we're extending a lot of features that make Link more useful and make it easier to work with Link in VB10.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jonathan. This really helps clear it up. I hope the community appreciates all the work that the VB team has done to, for Link.
Yeah.
And
we'd love to hear their feedback.
To hear your feedback.
Talk to us on the VB team blog or conferences or wherever.
Yeah, you're all over the VB team blog and stuff. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again, Jonathan.
Cool. Thanks.
All right.